Welcome to another episode of One For You, the movie podcast which gives you the best of both worlds. A review of a brand new release in Swiss cinemas, as well as a deep dive into cinema history. We went to the cinema to see
Destroyer.
And our gem is Caramel. I'm Olivia Cionameu.
I'm Andrea Dean.
Andre, welcome back to the podcast.
Welcome back. I was here last time.
Yeah, but you know, it's like we have to have a ritual. Like we come back and it's
Thank you, Olivia.
Welcome. Yes, you're welcome.
I welcome you back as well.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you, Andre. So, did you manage to see anything? Do you have a quick fire recommendation for our listeners before we get into it?
Yeah, nothing entirely new, but I rewatched Into the Spider-Verse at home again. And I really enjoyed it watching a second time because I think the first time around in the movies, because I was so excited about it, I missed lots of visual jokes that now I saw for the first time, I guess. If you don't know the movie, it's a new take on Spider-Man. It's not Peter Parker, it's Morales. And he's a new kid struggling with teenage life, I guess. And it's lots and lots of fun.
Yeah, go watch it. It's an animated film.
Yes, and it just won the best Oscar for animated film over Isle of Dogs, which I'm not entirely sure, but... Yeah, well, that's a talk for
anyway.
Yeah,
no.
Have you seen anything
else? Yes, I saw actually Shazam, which is the DC Universe like getting back on track. I mean, Aquaman was something, but this is actually a good film and very entertaining. It's the story of young Billy Batson, played by Asher Angel, who gets like these incredible magical powers thanks to an old wizard who's called Shazam. And when Billy says Shazam, he turns into a grown man, aka Zachary Levi, and he has all these superpowers. And it's a lot of fun. It's really like... It's just fun. You watch it and you're like a little kid, or I was like a little kid, and I had so much fun. And I want to run through the streets running Shazam, yelling Shazam as well, and hoping that I also turn into a superhero. But I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. Okay. So also, if you want to check out my full-length review of that, even though it's in German, it's you can find it on our Twitter. I retweeted it.
Yes. Go read it.
Okay, so let's go over to something entirely different. Current release.
Yeah, Destroyer. Destroyer by Karen Kusama. Her latest film, and it's with Nicole Kidman. It's a, I think it's in the tradition of a film noirish type detective thriller where Nicole Kidman plays Erin Bell, who is a former undercover detective. It starts off with her sitting in a car, looking very gritty, looking very beaten down. And then she goes to a crime scene and she might discover something that reminds her of her past. Of her past with Chris, who was also another undercover detective. And they infiltrated a gang in the past and then something went terribly wrong. Yes, it's very clearly a Nicole Kidman film. There's lots of talk about her.
Yeah, I mean, we should say not in the vein. It's very different from what she's done before, but it's her film.
It's her film, yes. And it's marketed as a Nicole Kidman film. And I think there's a lot of emphasis on the physical transformations she went through. There's a lot of makeup. But it's also, as I mentioned before, a detective thriller in the tradition of film noir. There's something haunting her. She's a very grizzled detective. She has gone through something terrible. And there's also, in her relationship with her daughter, there's maybe a past that might repeat itself. And she very much wants to end that in its roots.
And the way the story is told, basically you have the present where she discovers this body and then that triggers the memory sort of you know, what happened 16 years ago. And it's even like at one point a song plays that says something like, "Father, please hear my confession." So it's basically that's what the film is, like her confession of what happened 16 years ago. And then you have these two timelines, the present and the past, and they're sort of intertwined and you get always get a little bit more of the past. And I think that is maybe not necessarily to the film's advantage because, you know, you do not spend enough time in the past to really understand why she did what she did, I feel like. So there, that shortchanges the whole monumental decision in a way.
Yeah, the main part of the movie is still in the present. And for the main part of the movie, you have no idea what's going on. And she is just really angry and really grizzled. And everybody tells her, oh, you look like Nicole Kidman, but you're really fucked up. And it's just, for me, it was really exaggerated. Everything and everybody was super serious, way too serious, and I did not get into it. I thought it was really boring at first, and then when we get into the action bits that are very much marketed now in the trailer, for example, I thought it was lacking that connection that you mentioned before, that I don't really feel for her. I don't know why she ended up there, really. Yeah, and then there's also the problem with the structure. There's so much information withheld that in the end I felt really cheated, and it's just this suspense and the mystery that is just on the basis of withholding information, and I really didn't like that.
I mean, I did get into the film. I thought it was like it got more and more intense, you know, and it was like for me one of those things where you know that it's not going to end well, but like you hope against hope that maybe they don't do the thing that you know they're going to do. So I got it drew me in. And you also mentioned before we started recording that you thought it was too long.
Yeah.
I did not have this issue. I didn't think it was boring or anything. I mean, I don't think it's like a great film, but yeah. I thought, you know, like for like a one-time thing, it was actually, you know, there was something there. And I think if you want to see it, you're probably going to see it for Nicole Kidman's performance. I don't think because of the story or anything else. Although there are some nice visual shots, I think, you know, a few times you have the camera like has a top-down shot and you see a lot of symmetrical things like the cars parked, for instance, or like the cafeteria at the FBI or like a mosaic, which is very symmetrical. And then you have lonely human figures in there and you emphasize that their loneliness and like their smallness. And I thought, you know, those were some nice touches. But I think like, for instance, Toby Kebbell is wasted. He's like the big bad, but it's a laughable criminal wannabe philosopher. Like, I know what you want. Ooh, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, you know, that was not so well played.
Yeah. And the whole title is also a reference to Hindu mythology. And it's, for me, it felt really forced. And what you say, this wannabe philosopher. And he has this terrible wig on.
It's very bad. And then I wasn't sure if it was him or not. I was like, it looks like Toby. But
who made that choice?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, Bradley Whitford was really good.
Yes. Oh, yes. There's one scene that I actually liked from start to beginning. And it's because of him. And he is so snarky. And he really points out everything that is wrong with the motivation of the Aaron Bell character, the Nicole Kidman character. And that is a great scene. It's also very well written, whereas the rest of the film, there's a lot of quiet, a lot of silence, and a lot of tension, if you will, if it works for you, I guess. But that was actually one scene I liked, where she goes to Silas' lawyer.
Yeah,
I think he is.
Yeah.
He's the lawyer of Silas, this drug lord or gang leader. I'm not entirely sure what
gang.
He is.
It's like he's like it's a criminal. Like they.
It's a criminal gang.
Criminal gang. Yes.
Probably also some drugs.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely
drugs. Drugs.
Yeah. And we should also say Sebastian Stan is also in this film. He's
Chris.
The other. Yeah. Chris. So the
undercover detective.
So he's in the past.
Yeah, and they say at the beginning, they will play this very well. This couple that infiltrates the gang at the beginning, and they will play play well together, and they do, and then get involved. I don't want to give anything away.
I think we should stop here.
Yeah, we should stop here.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. That was also a problem. I thought. He was fine. Everybody was fine. And yes, it's a Nicole Kidman film and she's okay. But mostly with these performances, like we just had with Vice or also a few years ago with Foxcatcher, if you remember that. There's certain performances where the makeup is taking over the performance and everything the film does is just exaggerate and emphasize the physicality and the physical transformation. And yeah, it's also a way of drawing attention to the performance for the Academy members. I think mostly, I mean, it worked in both cases for Christian
Bale
and who did Foxcatcher? Stephen Carell.
Yeah.
Stephen Carell. Yeah, and for the most part, I thought they were really hoping for an Oscar nomination for Nicole Kidman. Didn't work out.
Yeah, I think their makeup was almost a bit too much. It was a little bit distracting at times.
Yeah.
And it somehow reminded me, for some reason, of The Hour.
Yeah.
Or The Hours?
The Hour, I think. With the nose.
Yeah, with the nose, right. It reminded me a little bit of that. Yeah, but I think all in all, Kidman does like a good job.
Yeah,
I think with also the rest of her physicality that is not just based on, on the makeup.
Something that I really liked about her performance is how she walks. She really sells you on this really beaten down detective cop that there's something dragging her down at every moment and there's so much weight on her shoulder. And she really conveys that in just her physicality and how she walks. The makeup I didn't like so much, but that really sold me on her character. Yeah,
so I think maybe not necessarily one for us. I mean, you are like, no, I think if you want to see to do it, I don't think you necessarily have to see it at the cinema, but you know,
if you're into that, definitely
go
check it out.
Okay, then let's move on to the jam session. And as always, there will be spoilers in this, in this segment. So if you haven't seen Caramel, or as it's called by its Arab title, I'm going to try it, okay? Sukkar Banat, I think. And if not, I blame my source who gave me this pronunciation. I will name them and shame them if I get complaints. Anyway, that sort of means Sugar Girls, I think. And it's this Lebanese film by director Nadine Labaki. And it's about this beauty salon in Beirut, in Lebanon, where a group of women is sort of dealing with all that life throws at them. And they depend on each other and have each other's support. And it's a story about women, I think, of all ages and all religions. And they have very different struggles at times, but they're always there for each other. And I think that's basically the setup. I think on IMDb or so, it says like it's a romantic comedy, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's more about the female friendships than about
It's romantic romance. At times and it's comedic at times, but it's not your classical romantic comedy.
No, I don't think that the love story is in the the focus.
That is one part I like. There's different romances around. And sometimes the men are entirely omitted.
Mm-hmm.
There's the omission of the main character's lover, who we never see him.
Yeah, because I mean he's a married man, so she's having an affair with him, and we always only hear him like honking, and then he calls on the phone, and she's like, "Oh, okay, yes, yes." And then they go somewhere in his car and like conduct their affair in cars and under bridges and stuff. Because as we later realize, you know, you can only, for instance, go to a hotel if you're married and you need to prove this with your ID.
There's an entire montage where she tries to get a room somewhere. And in the end, she has to pretend that she's a hooker to even get a room somewhere.
Yeah, so she sort of goes to a very, very, seedy hotel, Layal, who's played by the director Nadine Labaki. And, you know, and then she cleans the entire hotel room, like really, because it's gross. And she cleans everything. She changes the sheets and everything because I think it's his birthday, maybe?
Yeah, she has a cake.
Yeah, and
which tastes terrible.
Apparently, yes, but then he doesn't even show up, right? So that's her thing. And all the while, for instance, she's ignoring this police officer who's obviously very much in love with her.
Yeah.
Yeah, or I think it's a super adorable moment when he's sitting across from the from the saloon, and she's like talking on the phone to her lover because he forgot something in the car, and then he imagines himself having a conversation with her, so he only imagines his half and then we hear her half, and somehow it makes up a real conversation.
It's intercut, and it's a clever idea.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Me too. What you said about the salon, I think it's very much about the five or six characters, but it's also very much about the city and the different places. It's all taking, many scenes are taking place in this hair salon where two of them work. And in the end, it also says
three.
This,
three.
Oh, yes, yeah. Of course. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, and in the end, it also says it's a tribute to Beirut. Mm-hmm. So it's not only about the characters, but also about the city and the women in this city. And I thought it won me over with its charm. It was just, at the beginning, I didn't buy into it so much, but I think there's a lot of ammunition in the film where you could dismiss it as not a good film, but why would you want that?
Why?
It's not a technically perfect film. It's not a very stylish film, but it's very charming and it's well acted and it's well done. Yeah, you know, it's not like the greatest film ever, but... I think it's very charming.
I really like it. I've seen it several times, which is why I suggested it now for Gem. And, you know, I like how they play with the instance for in the beauty salon with these moments where you have like all this, the intimacy that comes with, you know, taking care of someone. For instance, there is, what's her name? Her name is Rima, and she's like coded, she's like the least traditionally feminine woman, and she's coded as a queer woman, I think.
Very clearly. Yeah.
And then there's another woman who comes in and has her hair done It's always Rima who does it. And it's this very intimate scene. I mean, all she does is like wash her hair, but they look at each other, they smile. And it's very, you know, you can see the intimacy that can be created here. And I also like the whole, you know, how they show you how it's important that you take that, you know, the importance of taking care of oneself for feeling good. I mean, not necessarily you have to look so-and-so or so-and-so, but just, you know, that you make a conscious effort to whatever and how that can make someone feel good. So I thought that was really nice that they did this. And also that, you know, they have older women in here. Mm-hmm. For instance, there are two in the neighborhood, there are two women, Rose and Lily, who are like Lily, I think she has some mental health issues. I don't know if it's always been like this or if it came with age, but she roams the streets and she looks for letters from her lover, she says.
She collects paper.
Yes, it's like random paper that she wants. And she's just like, sometimes she's like, oh, sweetheart, blah, blah. And sometimes she's yelling at people and everything. And her sister, who's a tailor, has to take care of her. And then these are the moments where it's like, you know, the sacrifices she has to make for that. For instance, she has a flirtation with one of her customers and it's really cute and it's really nice. And then in the end, she realizes she can't do it because she needs to take care of her sister. And so it's just them in the end. So that was like a bittersweet moment, I think.
Yeah, I think it tackles a lot of maybe taboo issues. Mm-hmm. Aging, we have mental health issues. We have a queer identity in maybe a society where it's not entirely accepted. I really like the her name is Shamal.
Mm-hmm.
She's an aging actress. She goes to all these auditions and sees all these younger actresses who are maybe more wanted for the jobs she's applying for. And in the end, it turns out she's pretending to still have her period, even though she doesn't. And after that scene, her whole performance makes sense to me because she's overacting and all the time. And I thought it was a very nice performance, but it only made it wholesome in like the last few scenes.
Okay.
When you realize that twist. Yeah.
Okay. I already liked it before because, you know, when you have the instance where she's at the she's at an audition and you see her like we have the audition camera, we see that, and then, you know, turn like this, do this, do that, and you can see the desperation in her face and how this is a very humiliating moment for her. And I thought that was really nicely done. I like that. And also there's the story of Nisrin, who's getting married, but she had premarital sex with someone who is not her fiancé.
Mm-hmm.
So she sort of needs to figure this out. So first they're like, well, you could just kill a dove and like sprinkle some blood on the bed sheets. And like, So she goes to a doctor and sort of has like a sort of hymen replacement or whatever, you know, and all these sorts of issues. So they all have different problems. But, and, you know, maybe in something that we wouldn't see in what we call a romantic comedy that is from like the US or something. So that's a bit different.
That's one thing I really liked. You say she has some kind of procedure. Mm-hmm. She is coded perhaps as queer. It's all not very explicit. It's very subtle. And I think that worked really well.
Yeah, and it might be that this is out of necessity, you know, yeah. because you cannot be too obvious, but sometimes that is also helpful for a film, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely, definitely like that one.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's
definitely one for me.
One for us, I guess.
Yeah. Yay. Okay, so before we end this episode, quick recommendation, something you're looking forward to, Andre.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Free Solo.
No, me too.
It's the story of a climber. His name is Alex.
It's a documentary, actually.
Oh, yes, it's a documentary picture. The story about a climber called Alex Hollum.
Honnold,
and his attempt to climb El Capitan free solo. Free solo means without any securities, without any ropes, and it's about him and the pressures of himself, his environment. He's a newfound girlfriend, and what that means and how that changes, but also how the filming of this documentary, him being filmed climbing up that huge mountain, which is just so slippery and so steep, changes how he climbs, or could endanger him even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just won the Oscar for Best Documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like it might be like an exciting film, you know, like, yeah. I know nothing about climbing actually, but it seems like, you know, why you would ask yourself, like, why would anyone do this? Because the chances of dying are really high. Yeah. So
I've seen it already, and it is very exciting. Yeah. And I was biting my nails a lot. And I think it also makes a really good job of explaining you how he climbs, and mm-hmm. that climbing is not only, oh, I'm going to climb up this wall, but so much journaling, so much thinking of how he's going to transition certain passages. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's an overall really good documentary. Go check it out.
Yes, definitely will do that. And that was it for this episode of the One For You podcast. Our gem for next time is the French film Girlhood. And the new release that we're going to be discussing is Mid-90s, the skater film by Jonah Hill. If you want to suggest a gem to us, we now have a Letterboxd account, which is...
One For You on Letterboxd.
One For You on Letterboxd.
Go look up the suggestion list that I created, and you can just add a comment, and then I will add it to the list.
Yes. So give that a go. And to get in contact for a chat or a rant or general randomness, find us on Twitter, where we're at OneForYouPod, or write us an email at OneForYouPod@gmail.com. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.